This podcast is brought to you by Deepbridge Capital LLP. Deepbridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Welcome to this Deepbridge Discovery podcast. My name is Andrew Aldridge. I'm partner and head of marketing at Deepbridge Capital. The aim of these podcasts is to bring to life the investments and the venture capital world that Deepbridge Capital is involved in. I'm delighted today to be joined by my colleague, Dr. Savas Neofitu, who is partner and head of life sciences at Deepbridge Capital. So, Savas, thank you for joining us today. And can we maybe kick off by just you telling us a little bit about your background prior to Deepbridge?
How long do you have? You could be here all day.
Well, I can't say the things that you learned at university and things like that, so they're too big a word, so you'll have to do this yourself.
Do you want me to draw a picture?
Absolutely. Go on, then.
Well, I had a degree in pharmacology at Manchester University, so that was my foray into the world of pharmaceuticals, and had really good schooling there. It's one of best pharmacology schools in the country, really good time to be in Manchester in the early 90s, through the advent of Manchester, etc.
And you say that as a proud Scouser as well, don't you?
I've been called a lot worse. Yes, I do live in Liverpool, so although you can guess from my accent, I'm not a native of Liverpool. And then I did a PhD at Nottingham University. Foolishly, I turned down the opportunity, not even my kids believe this, to do a PhD at Cambridge, to go and join Prof. Marsden, because he was really the guy to work alongside in the area of psychopharmacology in the UK. He brought into the country a particularly interesting technique to study neurotransmitters in the brain, and that was always fascinating me. So I did that, went to Nottingham, and got my PhD.
And then what after your qualifications?
After my PhD, I was all set on following a career in academia. I had a J-1 visa to go over to the US for a postdoctoral research project at in Boston, and I was all set to do that, and almost by coincidence, really, as a poor student, I was turning up to milk round presentations and for the free wine and food, and picked up a couple of application packs and applied to a few investment banks. And to my surprise, I ended up getting a few interviews, and they kept calling people back and had multiple rounds of interviews. And the Merrill Lynch one was particularly interesting. We had about five or six rounds and a whole day of selection. Put us up in a swanky hotel in Mayfair, and a bunch of 22, 23, 24-year-old kids let loose in Mayfair.
You had an
expenses account. It was great. Yeah, it was great. But yeah, literally the week before I was due to fly out to Boston, I had an offer from JP Morgan, and I had a good long think about what I wanted to do, and realized that actually influencing science at the level of the bench was great. It was really exciting, but to actually have a better probability of having an impact, if you could have an understanding of the world of finance, you could influence multiple projects rather than just the one project that you were involved in. So I just thought I'll go and give a go for 3 years. Yep. and leave, and 22 years later I'm still there.
That's how most careers start, isn't it? Yeah, try something for a few years and get addicted to it. But yeah,
good. True enough.
So JP Morgan's where you started, and then kind of what was your career like after that, and where did you go?
JP Morgan, I was lucky enough to be part of their M&A team, I think eventually they discovered or realized that I had a PhD in biomedical science. So they thought I'd better actually specialize in that, in corporate finance. And after that, I worked in a number of areas within equity capital markets, place which is now no longer an investment bank as a result of the 2008 credit crunch and the aftermath of that, Bear Stearns, which was a big old Wall Street investment bank at the time, and 8 years at Panmure Gordon, and sort of that was the sort of longest period of time, led one of the biggest IPOs at a time when it was difficult to actually do IPOs of biotechs in the UK, led one of the biggest IPOs in the UK market at the time, and yeah, just got a lot of deals under my belt and learned the way of the city, across various areas.
And you were nominated for various awards during that period as well, I believe.
I did all right, I suppose.
Too humble to mention, obviously, aren't you, Seb?
I think if you're there long enough, you get nominated for a few things.
Fair enough. And then, obviously, kind of after Panmure Gordon, you've also kind of done your own kind of digital tech startups and things like that. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that was when I learned there's a difference between cutting edge and bleeding edge. I remember leaving Panmure Gordon and co-founding and being the CEO of a telemedicine company, going around to do sort of fundraising with a lot of the VCs, and I was told that you really couldn't do medicine over a smartphone. I mean, you need to actually see people, and it only took a pandemic to prove people wrong, but it was it was certainly an interesting time. It was definitely, as we know now, the right thing to be doing. We have a supply and demand imbalance in healthcare, and to carry on doing the same thing over and over again and expecting that it will be a good outcome in the end is just it's not a sane attitude to have. So trying to introduce some form of technology into that is definitely what we were trying to achieve at the time. I was lucky enough to have the likes of Ben Carter, who is with us here at Deepbridge now, as my chief commercial officer, and a good tech team that we put together to sort of build the app. But it was definitely, at the time when a lot of people were doubting whether you could do telemedicine.
So after delving into the world of startups and what have you, kind of what then brought you to Deepbridge, and kind of what was the driver there?
I'd known Ian Warwick for a long time prior to actually joining Deepbridge, and we'd always talked about his ambitions to have a life sciences business, and he was a guy that really believed in the application of new technologies in solving big problems of the world, and healthcare, as we all know, is a big problem. It takes up a huge proportion of the world GDP, even in pre-pandemic times,
and that's gone through the roof in the last 18 months, 2 years. Yeah,
indeed. Yeah, and it's not just because GDP is not grown because of the pandemic, but in the US, it was pushing up towards 20% of US GDP was spent in healthcare, and Europe it was more like 10%. The UK, around about that sort of 8 to 9%. So you have to be aware that that's a big part of the economy and the application of new solutions, that be it being new medicines or new diagnostics or new bit of kit or equipment or even broad technology in health tech. Yeah, is really something that appealed to Ian, and the timing was right. I exited my telemedicine business at the time, and it was the right time in January 2016 to come and join in to set up the life science business.
Fantastic. So what were your dreams or ambitions of the Deepbridge life sciences team when you were founding it several years ago?
Well, survived to the 5th of April initially. joking aside, it was I'd obviously known you know, investments on the other side as agent, being in investment banking or responsible being an entrepreneur, but actually being in a place where, you know, you had a lump of money which needed to be deployed because people don't give you the money and expect you to sit on it. They want it to be put to work and put it to work quickly. And making sure you're making the right investment decision, and making sure you've got a process in place, making sure that you build pipelines to allow you to actually have good decisions, good investment decisions to make. Those were the things which you know, occupied me. You know, or you would say putting one foot in front of the other, rather than, you know, have some big plan for world domination. It was just making sure that we had the right infrastructure in place to allow us to make investment decisions.
Building those foundations, I guess, then, to grow. So you mentioned kind of getting deal flow in and companies ready to invest. I think most people will understand that we've got some great life sciences companies in our portfolio. Where do you find those companies from, or how do they come to your door, DeepBridge's door?
Well, initially we'd turn up at the opening of an envelope, as I keep saying. It was all about getting out there and, you know, whether it was accelerators, whether it was, you know, speaking to tech transfer teams at universities, talking to, you know, other entrepreneurs and their networks, and accessing, you know, other VCs and trying to, you know, get in on some of their pipeline and syndicate with them. You know, it was all about really speaking to people. It's not, you know, there's no secrets, there's no deep secrets in building pipeline. You've just got to be active out there speaking to people.
It's graft and meeting the right people and talking to the right people. So you've obviously now got a life sciences team. Obviously you came in as number one in that team. But can you just tell us a little bit about your team and kind of their specialisms and kind of what that means for you as a team, as a collective?
Yeah, we're very fortunate to have good people at DeepBridge, you know, right across. But you know, in life sciences in particular, you know, we've got, you know, it's a small team, but each person has got their own areas of expertise, and they all just work really well together. And I'm really proud of the work they're doing. So, you know, without wanting to sort of embarrass them individually, but you know, each one of them. Heather, you know, is our organizer. Without her, we just wouldn't know what day it was. And we've got Alison, who's got a degree, you know, from Oxford University, and understands those long, big words that sometimes bamboozle people in life sciences. And Ben has got an amazing background in commercializing life sciences technologies, and having taken a number of them from sort of sales of zero to sales of millions of pounds in previous jobs, having been himself a CEO of a startup, having been chief commercial officer with me prior to that in telemedicine. You know, we've got really good, really good sort of complementary skills across the board.
And then am I right in thinking that when, in order to make sure that we've got the coverage on the board seats of investee companies, et cetera, you've now got a team of kind of non-execs that we turn to depending on skill sets? Is that how it works?
Yeah, indeed. We've got a portfolio directors is not a particularly novel principle. But yeah, these are people that we've known, you know, over the years with necessary skills, not just in the various verticals, but, you know, obviously across their ability to sort of interact with people, or, you know, bring in certain skills, be it sort of actual knowledge of sort of commercializing things or regulatory aspects, or, you know, the ability to understand legal contracts or licensing, you know, products. So, you know, depending on fit, we do turn to those people, and they take up a role as being the DeepBridge director.
So the right skill set for the right company, depending what they need.
Exactly.
Great. So just kind of looking back at your last few years at DeepBridge, kind of, are there any kind of particular highlights from that time that stand out to you?
Every day is a different challenge, and you know, there's not a lot of repetition in this job. Well, other than the reading of legal contracts and shareholders agreements,
the bane of your life.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the bane of every every investor, but they are a necessary evil. You know, I guess some of the successes we've had is being able to, you know, steer companies from vapor stage to, you know, which is, you know, really sort of having come to us with nothing other than just an idea on a piece of paper to be scaling commercially and being able to, you know, really being at a point to attract serious amounts of transformative investment to be able to sort of take them through, you know, through to a position which exit can be considered. But, you know, in all of that, it's really the little victories that you remember, and some of them would have been around periods of time when you just had to sort of stand your ground and where an idea or an investment was not particularly going well, and you had to just go back to the basics and say, well, why is it that we made that investment? Why is it that hasn't quite worked, and what is it that we need to do to make that into a success? Because life and investments is not always a straight line. You've got to roll your sleeves up and actually try and make things happen. And those are the little things. And I don't want to sort of mention any examples, but those that know there's some good companies in our portfolio, but the ones that have been the most pleasing to us and the team is the ones we've had to sort of roll our sleeves up and really make some critical changes to keep them going.
I guess it's sometimes been the voice of reason, I guess, isn't it? When all things are going off around you and you're the one as the VC to say, well, actually, get back to basics. How do we take this forward? What are the next steps? And being that voice of reason, I guess.
Yeah, I guess we can overcomplicate venture. We can overcomplicate early stage investments, but common sense goes a long way. It's easy to say, I've been there myself as an entrepreneur. When you're on or near the coal phase, it is difficult sometimes to see the wood from the trees. So having someone that can sort of stand back and just say, well, look, let's not overcomplicate things. Let's just go back to basics. Let's do A, B, and C and see where it comes out. My team, our philosophy is all about not making too many assumptions. So we like to have to run experiments to prove certain ideas, and it's difficult to do that, particularly in drug discovery, where the life cycle of technologies is so long, and it takes so long to take things through testing and through to registration. But you have to do it to make an assumption that because you've had a bright idea, the whole world is going to think it's a bright idea. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, I think I remember talking to yourself and Ian, a few years ago, and we were talking about kind of at what stage did Deepbridge like to invest, and it's that kind of stage where things aren't just a good idea. You take away the assumptions that somebody's come up with a great idea for a bit of tech or a med tech or whatever it might be, but it's got to be beyond that. It's got to be beyond just being a good idea, whether that's commerciality or whether that be clinical trials or whatever it is, and I guess that's kind of a crucial to you guys.
It is. It's a slightly schizophrenic existence because in our SEIS products, you do often just back good ideas. We try and sort of see things that have got IP or at least have the prospect of getting some IP, a protectable position. But in reality, when you're putting sort of Series A type of money, 1 to 5 million, you do need to see a bit beyond the proof of concept.
And I guess that's a key differentiator between SEIS investing and EIS investing, is that hopefully if a company progresses to EIS fundraising, that they've got a little bit more traction, they've gone through that kind of initial assumption testing.
Right. And again, it is difficult. It's different between tech and life sciences. But even in life sciences, you need to go beyond proof of principle. It's got to be proof of concept. You've got to be able to sort of have something a bit more than just, this is a good idea. This is what we're going to do to try and solve that.
Yeah.
Who have you spoken in the trade that also thinks that's a good idea? Who's going to be your customer? What's your business model going to be? Test all of those hypotheses and try and find a good business model.
Yeah, brilliant. One of the highlights of you being at Deepbridge obviously has been recently you were awarded the Most Valuable Player Award at the Growth Investor Awards. That's great for Deepbridge and really shows, I guess, the importance of life sciences. Is that kind of how you took it? Obviously, it means your great self. Is that kind of a potential recognition of how important life sciences now is in the investment in the VC world?
Yeah, no, I think you had it right the first time. I am great. So, awards, the nice to have, and you know, you can make you know, some noise around that, and it sort of, you know, it is a positive reinforcer to what you do. But anyone who's in business will tell you that you know, it's all rear view mirror, and often, you know, you sort of stand there and you think, you know, gosh, you know, I've been awarded this for things which happened sort of 6 months ago or a year ago, and the world has moved on so much, and we've got, you know, and it's almost embarrassing to sort of say, oh, you know, thank you, but wait until you see what I've got coming up. But the reality is that, you know, and everyone will say this, although that's an individual award, I wouldn't be there receiving that if it wasn't for the team. And you know, I say that with every conviction I have. You know, if it wasn't for Heather, I wouldn't even know, you know, how to start my day. I wouldn't know what I'm doing.
You wouldn't
next.
Have made it to the award ceremony.
I probably wouldn't. you know, really, she's my, you know, ears and eyes, and without her, we wouldn't function. You know, not having Alison around to be able to, you know, keep us all on track and ask those difficult questions when it comes to understanding some science, or, you know, even, you know, her common sense and increased ability to sort of, you know, figure out with good business now where we need to go. Again, you know, things just wouldn't function. I wouldn't have the time to be able to, you know, spend the quality time with the portfolio company to try and make those, you know, little steps that they need to go forward. And Ben is just, you know, a force of nature. You know, he's anyone that has worked with him, and, you know, he knows that.
We'll edit that bit out, so if it's fine.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, he's just, you know, he's a whirlwind. He, you know, he's got, you know, so much energy, and delves into, you know, but you know, he's been around when we're recruiting new CEOs. So, you know, doing interviews, he's, you know, he's there doing some of the early stage due diligence. He's there you know, actually helping CEOs put down the business plan, the commercial plan. He is a really unique individual, and we're very lucky to have him. You know, the team is why we win awards, whether they're individual awards or whether they're, you know, collective awards.
Yeah, I think it is also as well the recognition that you know, DeepBridge was the first fund to launch a life sciences EIS fund, and really put a focus on that market, which, you know, over the last couple of years has really come to the fore. And I think you know, that's I think testament to kind of the foresight that you and Ian had to basically start an EIS fund and that specialise in life sciences. So I think that's yeah, testament to that as much as anything as well. But so kind of looking forward, you mentioned that yeah, things move on quickly in all worlds, but particularly in VC and what you're doing. So kind of what are your hopes for the next 12, 24, 36 months? Kind of what's the future look like?
I mean, it's difficult to make too many predictions, but, you know, I can guarantee you're going to have some failures, and we're going to have some businesses that succeed, and you know, and hopefully, you know, on balance, we'll have more successes than failures. You know, what I'd like to see is we have a number of our portfolio companies, three or four of them, that are taking in transformative investments, including ones from other VCs. What is going to be the challenge now is for those businesses to understand that it's just the start of their journey, rather than you know, thinking they've made it, and to try and make those plans and execute, because, you know, transformative amounts of capital to lead to commercialization is all well and good, but again, life is not very seldom is in a straight line. And you have to execute those plans. You have to get to the next juncture in a stronger position than you were. So what I'm looking for is, you know, maybe one or two of those companies to make the right sort of progress, get products over to some big, you know, global markets like the US, hopefully a couple of them will get to exit.
Brilliant. Good. Well, we look forward to catching up with you on a future podcast to hear more about that. So kind of away from work and, you know, tell us a bit more about who Sav is. I mean, kind of what are your personal interests away from work?
Oh, I've, you know, it's obviously, as you can tell, not telling of jokes.
That goes without saying.
Yes, I'll brush up on that for the next one. I'll have a few more humorous lines. I've busy enough with work, and you know, as some of you know, I, you know, enjoy going for a run. That's, you know, that's how I sort of clear my head, and I try and do that regularly. And you know, I used to do that in my 20s a lot, and you know, it's good to be able to do that. My kids, I have four children, and they have various interests, and so, you know, typical of anyone with young children, your dad's taxi taking them here, there, and everywhere. You know, three of the children do fencing. They fence épée, which means that again, I'd be taking them to competitions and helping out, and that actually sort of brought me to a role, you know, trying, you know, to help with the organization of the Commonwealth Championships, which is happening in August next year. They needed someone that understood finance, so I put my hand up, and they asked me to, you know, to sort of help out with that. So hopefully that's going to sort of go smoothly. It's obviously a very uncertain world that we live in, but you know, the preparation is great, and we're trying to give a really good experience to the athletes wherever they come from. Commonwealth, the Commonwealth is a really wonderful institution, and having these championships in the UK is going to be an amazing thing.
Excellent, very good. So without, for copyright reasons, we're not going to take you to a desert island. But yeah, can you just share with us kind of your favourite book, your favourite film, and your favourite song or album?
Yeah, I mean, when you've got business people talking about, you know, favourite books or whatever, you know, people will just say, oh, Jack Welch and the GE way, none of that. I think it's fair to say, as an ex-scientist, I guess, I was sort of a logical person, and you know, probably one of my weaknesses was lack of imagination. So you know, whenever I read you know, good books that allowed me to sort of open my horizons, that those were the kind of things that stuck to mind. So there's a really nice book of short stories by a guy called Will Self. It's called Grey Area. I guess that is probably, you know, sort of dystopian sort of short stories. It's an amazing book, and probably not particularly fashionable. It's a sort of a niche thing. Yeah, that I would say that's a really good book. So apologies, Jack Welch, because I'm sure he's listening in.
Absolutely. But, no, excellent. And then in terms of film, kind of what's your go-to film?
Again, you know, love my you know, almost sort of fantasy world type stuff. You know, anything to do with the you know, New York, and you know, and sort of, you know, things like the Mafia and stuff like that. So Goodfellas is a particular favorite of mine. Love that. But you know, again, I also love, you know, sort of, you know, fantasies like Avatar, for example. So yeah.
Very good. And then on to music, kind of what's your go-to album or song or playlist, or what are you, what's your go-to?
Oh, playlist, that's...
not the full list of playlists, but yeah. I was trying to sound a bit more modern just saying album, because a lot of people these days wouldn't know what an album is.
So. Yeah, no, well, my kids struggle with that, especially when I actually show them those shiny little discs and yeah. Say, yeah, CDs, you put them in there. And, I have a very, very... taste in music, you know, from heavy metal, you know, I would say probably one of the most sort of formative albums is Metallica's, known as the Black Album, but actually the title of that is not the Black Album, it's called Metallica. That's yep. One of the favorite, Back to Black with Amy Winehouse. Again, very different sort of, you know, artists, but those, you know, really great sounds. Yeah, I've also been known to listen to you know, Scala Radio and classical music, and you know, varied. I know what I like.
But when it's tax year end, you know, that you're trying to get those deals across the line to make sure all the clients' money's deployed before tax year end. Metallica, that's what's kind of getting you pumped up in the morning. Is that what it is?
Yeah, tax year end. I mean, I thought this was a family podcast. You know, you don't want to explicit to keep coming out. Yeah, Metallica is probably good.
Fantastic. Well, Sav, thank you very much for joining us. And yeah, we look forward to catching up with you again in future and seeing kind of progress with some of our companies. But hopefully that gives everyone a bit of an insight into to who you are as a person and yeah, why you are absolutely the right person to be leading kind of the only life sciences EIS fund in the market, which yeah, is a great, great kind of thing to be doing. So
brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us for this latest podcast. If you have any queries or any topics you'd like us to cover in future podcasts, please email us at discovery@deepridgecapital.com and we'll be certainly interested in looking at those going forward. We look forward to seeing you at the next podcast. Thank you. This podcast was brought to you by Deepridge Capital LLP. Deepridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon.